Hi, folks. This is Brad Bright and the God is the Issue podcast, where we show how God is the issue in every issue. Now, today, we're going to be taking questions from listeners. It's from my podcast, The Three Reasons Bill Maher Wants God to Exist. But instead of the listeners actually asking the questions, my wife, Kathy, who is here with me today, is going to be asking the questions from the listeners.
Yes, and just so you know, if you're watching us on video, we do have to make the microphone, share the microphone back and forth. We tried to get another microphone in here, folks, but it didn't work. So we're going to be sharing again. And I want to remind you of what those 3 points Brad made in the podcast were. The three reasons Bill Maher wants God to exist. He said we want God to exist because followers of Jesus have changed your life for the better. And then he showed how that is true. He also said that we want God to exist because if he doesn't, survival of the fittest is the only remaining basis for morality. And that's a scary thing. Then finally, he said, we want God to exist because if he doesn't, then morality is a fairy tale, just like Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. And a lot of you responded to those three reasons. A lot of you weren't very happy with Brad about some of those reasons. And the first statement that I want Brad to address, if you would, is that, I mean, I have atheists who are friends. And those atheists, many of them have high moral standards, Brad, and some of them even more moral than some of the people I know who claim to be Christians. And so his statement is, atheists can be moral. So what do you say to that?
Well, I say I completely agree. You can be an atheist and be very moral. You can be a Christian, or at least claim to be a Christian, and be extremely immoral. But that misses the point of the podcast. What I said is that if God does not exist, nothing obligates me to be moral. There's nothing in the universe that obligates me to be moral if God does not exist. That is a good question.
It is a good question. And you know what? I have to say, a lot of people stumbled over that word obligated. They wanted to make the case that people are moral, but they stumbled over or completely ignored the fact that where does obligation to be moral come from? So here's another question from a listener. So Christians are basically selfish. They behave so they can go to heaven and earn points with God. Brad, I've never heard that one before. What do you say to that?
Well, my initial gut reaction is this guy's really jaded. You know, that's... Yeah. He believes Christianity is transactional, that you give in order to get. I mean, that's like saying marriage is all about what I want. You know, the reason I love my spouse is so I can get something from her. I mean, that's what basically what the guy is saying.
That wouldn't work very long.
No, that wouldn't work very well at all. Marriages that are based on that, you know, give to get, that they don't last very long. You know, growing up, I tried to obey my parents, not because I was afraid of them, not because I wanted something from them. I tried to obey them because I loved them. They loved me. I loved them. I do nice things for my wife.
Yes, you do.
Because I love her. I try to love my kids and do things for them because I love them. Likewise, I try to please God because I love him. And more importantly, he loves me. So I don't see why that's so hard to understand.
I don't see why it's hard to understand either. I do a lot of things for you because I love you. And Brad cannot pull the wool over his eyes. So if I did it for any other reason, you would know, right?
Well, you know, after living with someone for 31 years, you kind of develop a sense for what's really going on sometimes. And if everything's not quite on the level, you can usually sense it almost immediately. She can sense it from me more often than I can from her. But fortunately, 31 years, we actually do love each other.
Yes, we do. And we love the Lord. And we do things because we love him, not to score brownie points. But so the next question is very interesting. The person said, you're quite happy to point out the good Christians have done, but none of the bad. And conversely, all the negative things atheists have done, but none of the good. So tell us about that, because I noticed that too.
Well, I was hoping someone would notice. I did it for a very specific reason. It was rhetorical bait. First of all, I wanted to point out that detractors of Christianity, this is what they do all the time. They always talk about what? The Inquisition, right? It's what they bring up every single time. But do they ever mention a single thing that Christians have done that has been for the good of culture, good of society? Not a single one. See, I simply reversed the scenario, and their reaction was predictable. So that's the first reason I did it. The second reason I did it is atheists always talk about how noble atheism is, but they omit the horrendous atrocities that some atheists have perpetrated on the human race. Like Lenin, Stalin, Pol Pot, Chairman Mao. You see, my goal was to both highlight what they always leave out and then to point out how humanity has benefited in real ways because of Christianity.
That's so good. And actually, it was encouraging to me because I can't tell you how many times I get those kinds of arguments, people blasting me and people of faith for the things we've done, but never, ever do they say, I'm so thankful for the Christian hospitals. I'm so thankful for how you all feed the poor. I'm so thankful. Nope, don't hear that. Only what we do wrong. Very good. Another listener in along those same lines said, you are happy, Brad, to drag out Joseph Stalin and Chairman Mao, like you just did, for their atrocities, but give no mention to the various witch trials and inquisitions throughout history, which only could have existed because of the Christian worldview at the time.
That's a pretty typical question, pretty typical accusation. But you see, it begs the question, what is a Christian really? See, there are a lot of goofy ideas out there of what a Christian is and isn't. See, most people assume that if someone claims to be a Christian, they must be a Christian. I don't. See, I can claim to be a car. I can sleep in a garage, but that doesn't make me a car. I can claim to be a Christian and sit in church every single Sunday. But folks, that doesn't make me a Christian, right?
Right. Exactly. I know people who do that, and they are not Christians. So, but also, Brad, what about this one? How about all of those people who claim that they believe in global warming, and yet they fly around in their private jets all the time? So do they really believe in global warming? I think their actions speak louder than their words, which is what this gentleman was saying. Sometimes actions are not reflecting what a Christian really believes.
Yeah, and that's the challenge in life, isn't it? We say we believe one thing, but our actions say we believe exactly the opposite. And so we can all approach this with a little humility, because I think for all of us, our actions never perfectly reflect who we think we are, even in our own heads. If we're really honest with ourselves, we'll say, you know, maybe I don't really live up to my own ideals, whether it's Christianity or even whether it's global warming. I think some of these folks who say they believe in global warming really think they do, but their actions certainly don't support it when they go flying around in private jets.
True.
Anyway, but let's move forward here. You know, let's define what a Christian is for our listeners. See, a Christian is a person who realizes that they are irreparably broken inside and can never be good enough to please God, at least not in their own efforts. So they trust Jesus to rescue them from their brokenness. That, at the most base level, is what a Christian is. See, a Christian's not perfect. Let's rid ourselves of that fairy tale right now. Christians are not perfect. Brad Bright, when he looks in the mirror, he's not perfect. See, but over time, here's the point. If I'm truly a follower of Jesus, my life should begin to change to reflect what I say I believe. So if a person's actions really do not support or they repudiate what they say they believe, and that doesn't start to change over time, they should really begin asking themselves, am I really a Christian? See, in general terms, a Christian is a person who follows Jesus, who places their trust in him, and who does what he taught. You know, Jesus said we're to love God, love our neighbor, love our enemies. Those are the core teachings of Jesus. And if our lives repudiate that, we really do need to look in the mirror and ask, am I really a Christian? Mm-hmm. See, Stalin and Mao and the Inquisition and the Salem witch trials all had the basic same basic problem. They all started with a broken view of God. See, on base Jesus's three commands, based on those three commands, the Inquisition was no more Christian than Stalin or Mao.
Wow, that is so true. And you don't hear that very often, but it is so true. No more Christian, the Inquisitions. Good. Here's another one. You give credit to Christians for fighting to end slavery in the Civil War. And yet, it was also Christians that fought to defend slavery in the Civil War. So what do we do with that?
I think the best way to respond to that is same song, second verse. Am I a Christian simply because I say I am, or am I a Christian because I follow Jesus and embrace his teachings? You see, a follower of Jesus loves his neighbor. He doesn't enslave his neighbor. See, now, I want every atheist to pay attention right here. I am hoping you will listen, because I'm going to give you a freebie, okay? I'm going to give you a tool that you can use with people who claim to be Christian. The next time you see a person, observe a person who claims to be a Christian, but who acts in a manner that does not reflect the three core commands of Jesus, which is to love God, love your neighbor, love your enemies, please ask them these two questions. Okay, are you listening? Ask them these two questions. What did Jesus mean when he said love your neighbor? What did he mean when he said love your neighbor? Secondly, and this is frankly a zinger, that I think more Christians need to hear sometimes, is how can you call yourself a Christian when you don't do what Jesus taught? That is the critical issue. I wish more Christians would ask themselves that question. I should ask myself that question more often when I look in the mirror. You see, these two questions will make a lot of insincere, half-baked Christians squirm just a little bit. It'll also, though, help you figure out if they're truly followers of Jesus or not.
That is so good. And we all need to be held accountable to living the way Christ has called us to live. And I love that. I get a little squirmy when I think of someone asking me that question, but it's a good question and good questions to ask. And I hope that if someone ever sees me acting in a way that doesn't reflect the values of Jesus, that you would ask me that question. Okay, so here's another one. It's rather lengthy. It's actually from someone who really was very thoughtful in his questions. And so here's what he said. He said, you ask, why are people obligated to follow moral laws? The simple answer is, you're not. The far less simple but more accurate answer is that certain moral beliefs benefit the survival of humanity as a whole, and those beliefs tend to spread universally. He also added that survival of the fittest, in quotes, applies to the survival of the species, not a given individual. His response was a lot longer and a lot more detailed, but that was the core of his argument, and he wanted you to respond to his thoughts on that.
Can I start by saying, finally, finally, an atheist who is both a thinker and is honest. Now, let me say, I disagree with him. But I commend him and I respect him for being thoughtful and for being honest. Now then, for all you other atheists who attack me for stating the obvious, that is, that without God, moral obligation cannot exist, I encourage you to learn from this guy. He admitted the obvious and then gave a thoughtful representation of his belief rather than some knee-jerk response. Now, let me respond to his argument. First, I'm going to talk about the whole issue of survival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest. He said it applies to the species, which is correct. But he also said it does not apply to the individual, which is incorrect. According to evolution, mutations must first work for the individual entity before they can be passed on to the entire species. So to say that it doesn't apply to the individual really is incorrect because it applies to both. So he's half right, half wrong. Now, likewise, if an individual does not see a specific behavior as beneficial to them, they won't implement it and therefore pass it on. For instance, let's just do it for instance. Take the general principle of honesty. You know, we often say, I often heard growing up, honesty is the best policy. Now, I think a lot of you would probably agree with that. In general terms, I think we are in agreement on that. However, throughout Latin America today, there's something called the morbida. It means the bribe. It permeates the culture from the highest levels to the lowest levels. It's the number one reason for widespread poverty throughout Latin America. See, it prevents them from building capital and therefore jobs because money gets siphoned off at all levels. I mean, if you want to learn more about this, more about the morbida and the negative impact it's had south of the border, I did a podcast a month or two ago called The Border, Compassion, and Jesus. You can go listen to that and learn more about the whole issue of the morbida. Now then, although it seems that honesty really is the best policy, the individual in Latin America sees morbida as the best policy for themselves right here, right now, today. As a result, that is what gets passed on to the entire society. So the critical question is how do you overcome that dynamic if moral obligation doesn't exist? How it's inertia that you have to overcome. Do you really think that individuals will always choose what is best for society?
No.
No, not if it's not best for them at the moment. Mm-hmm. See, here's another question for you. Okay, this brings it closer to home. Do Americans tend to vote for what is best for everyone or vote for what is best for themselves? Is there no self-interest in how we vote that sometimes trumps the self-interest of the country? There is. You see, apart from an overarching moral obligation, beliefs tend to spread universally that are the beliefs that benefit me personally today. So I have to respond, well, good luck. Good luck with that, because I think in real life it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Now my second response, and this relates to what I was just discussing, that is if moral obligation does not exist, then you have to get everyone to freely agree on what those common moral beliefs are. Now, you will always have cultures that don't believe that honesty is the best policy. What do you do? You will always have people who see the moral good differently than you do, both religious and non-religious people. And here's my third response to his observation. If moral obligation does not exist, then aren't we really just talking about moral preferences? If it's not obligation, then it's a preference. And moral preferences, frankly, just don't carry the same weight as moral obligation. If it is a preference, then really I get to decide for myself what's best for me. It's what many people call my truth.
Yes.
My truth is my preference. It's what I prefer to do for me. Now then, finally, here's my fourth response, is if there's no moral obligation, and we can't get everyone to agree on what is moral, then we have to resort to force. We have to. In order to get other people to behave the way you think best align with a moral good, you have to use force. I mean, that's just like what Stalin and Hitler and Mao and the Inquisition and the Salem witch trials, they were all operating according to their idea of the moral good. And that's a problem.
It is a problem. And I would say one example that I see, and as a woman, this is important to me, is that right now we are seeing that in the world of women's sports. Women are being forced to compete against biological men who identify as women in a very unfair way that is morally wrong. They're being forced to do that. Because why? A group thinks that they should be able to. There are differences in moral beliefs, and so one group is trying to force their moral beliefs on another group to that other group's detriment. So there we go, folks. And we can go through all kinds of issues like that. So if there is no moral obligation, if there is no higher power, then it's simply my truth against yours, and I will enforce my truth by force.
Yeah. And the person with the biggest stick wins. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. And that's not a very exciting proposition. All right. Last question here, I think. Why in the world would I want an all-powerful, inconsistent, authoritarian power in the sky reading all my thoughts? Why would I want a God who could end so much natural suffering, i.e. disease, famine, natural disasters? He could end it in an instant, but he actively chooses not to. Why would they even want to believe in such a God?
First of all, let me say, I don't want to believe in that sort of an inconsistent God you just described. I want a God who's both perfectly just and perfectly loving. I want a God who is both perfectly good and perfectly merciful. You see, I think what Americans often want, and they're not fully aware of it, is they don't want a loving God. They want a tolerant God, a God that's more like Santa Claus, who will give them what they want when they want it, a God who grades on the curve. And folks, that's a problem. I'm being honest here. That's what I observe around people who want God to be a certain way. And frankly, what you want, what I want, really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. You know, God doesn't say, oh, okay, you want that? Oh, okay, I'll change who I am in order to accommodate what you want. Folks, that's not, if God really exists, that's just not going to happen. It's not going to work that way. Now, secondly, contrary to what most people think, and this guy referred to it in here, most droughts and famines are not caused by natural disasters. Probably 90% of them are caused by misguided government policies, not disasters. So maybe 10%, but most of them really, even when there's disasters, if we work together, we could overcome them very, very easily and take care of our fellow man. But because we're selfish and self-centered and we have bad government policies around the world, people suffer. Okay? Now, the third, according to the Bible, mankind placed people in paradise. The challenge is he also gave them free will. And so Adam and Eve, with their free will, decided they wanted to do things their way, rejecting paradise. And the rest is history. We see it through wars, through struggles, through selfishness, and on. And we're simply living with the consequences of their choice. When I hear people talk like this, it's like they're entitled to live in paradise. Folks, you're not entitled to live in paradise. God is not your personal Santa Claus. I mean, he's not. You don't make a wish, click your heels three times, and you get what you want. That's not how it works in a fallen world. See, the issue is God gave us free will. And therefore, we have to live with the consequences of our choice, of our free will, and not just the consequences of our choices, but the consequences of the choice of all the people around us. You have to go one way or the other. You can't have your cake and eat it too, as the adage goes. So here's the question. Here's the bottom line question. Would you rather have paradise or free will?
It is so amazing to me that the people who make those kinds of arguments, they want their free will, but they also want God to come in and fix everything. If he came in and fixed everything, then is he overriding free will? And they want it both ways.
Yeah, they want him to be nothing more than a Santa Claus. Give me what I want, when I want, and how I want it. But you have to make a choice.
You do have to make a choice. And here's the challenging thing is, what if what I want is polar opposite of what Brad wants? And so Brad's over there asking God to do one thing. I'm asking God to do something totally different. It is just not that easy, folks. And so appreciate that. Yep. God is not a Santa Claus. Absolutely not. And he doesn't come in and rescue us from all of the bad choices that we make. So one other question. I thought we were done, but we do have one other question. The fact of the matter is, the listener said, just about any conceivable group of people with a large enough sample size has contributed positively and negatively to the world.
My first response is to say, true. However, it's that second word that clues you in. There's something more going on here. True, however, it is true that some have made more positive contributions than negative contributions. It is also true that some have made more negative contributions than positive contributions. Now, let me give you a for instance, and I'll tell you why I'm using this. Who has made the greatest contribution to the world, North Korea or South Korea?
I'd say South.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the satellite pictures going over North Korea and South Korea at night? If you haven't, folks, go look at those. What you'll see is North Korea is completely dark. It's just a hole. It's a dark hole. South Korea is lit up like a Christmas tree. It's the stark contrast right there. There's a definite line in between. It goes from darkness to light. You see, South Korea has a far higher standard, economic standard of living. While the average North Korean, who is a starving peasant, is ruled by a fat boy who seems to eat very, very well.
Yes.
And frankly, South Koreans have greater freedoms. While North Korean peasant, if he actually speaks his mind or she actually speaks her mind, she's either going to be imprisoned or he's going to be imprisoned or even taken out and shot. They have no freedom. So, and frankly, I have to say, I'm not really sure that North Korea has made any positive contributions to the world at all. Now, I could go on and on. I mean, for instance, the caste system in India, which basically spits on the untouchables, that's the lowest class. Or the social credit system in China, which the Communist Party uses to control everyone else. As I mentioned earlier, the morbida in Latin America, which traps many people in poverty. Or Islam, which often kills gays and adulterers. And folks, we can go on and on and on and on all day. So here's the question I want you to think about. Christianity gave birth to the scientific method. Why didn't the Chinese culture give birth to the scientific method, or Islam, or the Aztecs, or the Greeks, or the Romans, or the Babylonians? Were they dumb people? No. These were all very highly advanced cultures. And these cultures had a lot of smart people. So folks, what made the difference? I want you to think about that. You see, some people groups make more positive contributions. Some make more negative contributions. Now, never fall for the fairy tale that all cultures are basically equal. They're not. Although every person has equal worth and equal value in the eyes of God, not every culture contributes equally. You see, God really is the issue in every issue. Well, folks, Kathy, thank you for being here today. This is Brad Brighton, the God is the Issue podcast. Thanks for joining us. And folks, if you found this podcast helpful, please remember to like or subscribe.